We're in the middle of discussing the components of tshuva, and we have discussed those kinds of chatoyim that person first has to stop doing before he can regret doing them. That's what we spoke about last week. And this week we'll speak about now the next shlav, therefore, is charata, having regret. We spoke about what could bring a person to stop doing an aver he doesn't regret. That was last week. Now, once you stop doing it, you have to regret it. And regret has a lot of different different gradations. You can regret losing, you know, a quarter or a shekel. And you can regret losing your livelihood, your family, your house, or whatever. They're both called regret. But obviously there's a very big difference in the intensity of the regret. So there's all different levels of regret of doing chatoyim. What should make a person regret doing a chet? So there are a few different possibilities. And different people, different natures of people are more gravitated towards some of them more than others or whatever, but all of them are legitimate reasons for regretting doing something wrong. First thing is that a person feels that he's a kofui tova. If you really appreciate the Rabbanu Shel Olam and the part that he plays in your life, which is basically this your life and everything else that you have, and therefore, any chait, which is basically a rebellion against the Rabbanu Shel Olam, is a tremendous kfiya satov, tremendously ungrateful. Here the Rabbanu Shel Olam gives you everything, and you rebel against him. So that should make a person feel like an ingrate, an ungrateful person, and that should make a person regret doing an aveira. But it's much more than that. The Tomer Devorah says, if you really think into it, it's not just that you're ungrateful, but you're really, really a scoundrel. Because the Rabbanu Shel Olam gives you the power to use, to do, and to rebel against him. Right? Person eats a ham sandwich. Right? So, I'd love to use examples that really don't apply to any of us, because if we use examples that apply to any of us, we will be on the defensive. So I imagine that's not one of the big Yetzer Haras that people here have. So we'll use that as the example. Okay. Somebody eats a ham sandwich. So, first of all, the Rabbanu Shel Olam made the ham. He also made the bread. He also gave the energy to pick it up. Right? Just read in the Modiah about somebody who was just nifta recently. His name was Kordish, who was basically a paraplegic his whole life. And he couldn't even, what's it called, somebody asked him what's difficult about his life. He said when he sees a Rashi that refers to something a page later or a page before, he can't turn the page. That's what really makes him feel bad. And I guess that I sounded like a really special person. But in any case, so we take it for granted, you know, that we can move our hand. But it's not to be taken for granted. There are people who can't move their hands who are paralyzed. So the Rabbanu Shel Olam gave the koach, bli ayin hara, to move your hand. He gave you the ham, told you not to eat it, gave you the bread, and said you could eat it. He gave you the power to move your hand. Right? He gave you the power to open your mouth, because not everybody can open their mouth. You have lockjaw, you can't open your mouth. You have to eat intravenously. He gave you the power to chew, to taste things. And you're taking all the things the Rabbanu Shel Olam gave you and using them against him. It's not just being ungrateful. It's like really being a scoundrel. So if you really think into it, what it means to do an aveira, it's a tremendous kfiya satov. So to somebody who has that refinement, that he doesn't like to be an ungrateful person, right? That could be a source of regret of doing an aveira. Unfortunately, not everybody has good midos, and many of us don't really care if we're ungrateful or not. And don't have too much akara satov, so that is, for those kind of people is not a good incentive to feel regret. So there have to be other possibilities. Another possibility, that a person believes. If a person doesn't believe, then he doesn't believe he did a chet, then there's nothing to talk about. A person believes that the thing is wrong. He did it because he had a taiva, he couldn't control himself or whatever. Person believes that averas are not just a rebellion against God. In that respect, that it's a rebellion against the Ribbono Shel Olam, so you could feel that you're ungrateful. But the avera is also a damage to yourself. I've explained in the past many times, I'm not going to go into the details now, but just some of them, just to get the idea, and something from this week's Sedra, since it is in this week's Sedra. We've explained many times that there are two aspects to all sins. There's the king aspect and the doctor aspect. The king commands, and you get rewarded if you listen to the command, you get punished if you rebel against the king. That's one aspect of sins. The Ribbono Shel Olam is also an advisor, a doctor. And he advises us that the things that he prohibited are dangerous for us. They're harmful. They're detrimental. And if you do these things, you harm your neshama. And the punishment is intrinsic to the sin. And or the reward is intrinsic to the mitzvah. The mitzvah itself benefits you. The sin itself harms you. So the first aspect of regret is in the rebellion against the king. But the second aspect is in feeling that you've harmed yourself, that you've caused yourself damage. And you can regret causing yourself damage. I'm using the example of the smoker, person who smokes, right, and realizes how much he's hurt his lungs and made himself sick. So he regrets smoking because now he's sick because of the smoking, and he appreciates the fact that he's sick. So it's not a regret because he rebelled against anybody, it's because he harmed himself. And he recognizes the harm that he caused himself, and he feels that it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth getting, you know, some kind of terrible disease for the pleasure of the smoking. This idea of harming, the sin harms you. It's intrinsically damaging. Or a mitzvah is intrinsically beneficial. Aside from the fact that you get rewarded from the king, applies to most mitzvahs, the Shurei Das says. But there are exceptions. And he mentions two exceptions. One exception where the poison of the sin still applies, but God didn't prohibit it as the king. He let it go as the king, but he's still advising you that it's not a healthy thing to do. That is Eishes Yifas Tor. Marrying this goyish woman, going through the whole process, God said is okay. But I'm telling you that not good is going to come from it. You're going to end up hating her, having a ben sora mora. So I don't advise you to do it, but I'm not prohibiting it. So that's a case where the king doesn't prohibit it, but the doctor tells you that it's intrinsically damaging. The other exception is in this week's Sedra. Torah says that in Hakel, everybody has to come to Hakel once every 7 years, at the end of Shemitah. So all of Klal Yisrael come, Motzoi Yontif Rishon Shel Sukkos, to the Beis HaMikdash, and hear the king read Sefer Dvarim. And that's a mitzvah of Hakel. And Hakel, every man, woman, and child has to come, even infants have to come. So the Gemara says, I understand why men, women, even children of an educationable age have to come. Why do little babies have to come? What are they going to gain from Hakim? Right? They're just a nuisance. Why bring little babies? So the Gemara says, the reason that you bring them is to give reward to the people who bring them. Now, that seems to imply, we'll see on Shabbos in the Parshas here, that Rav Yecheskel Avramsky learns differently, it seems to imply there is no intrinsic reason to bring the little babies. Because if there would be, the Gemara should have said whatever it was. That it's good to be an environment, they'll gather by osmosis, the Kedusha, whatever. And that's the reason. But it doesn't say that. It says the only reason is to give reward to the people who bring them. So that means, says the Shurei Das, there is no intrinsic value of bringing these little babies to Hakim. However, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that you have to bring the little babies by necessity. Because there's nobody to leave them home with. Everybody has to come. Every man, woman, and child. Nobody stays home to be the babysitters. And you're obviously not going to leave them with the Polish maid. So, you're going to bring the little babies anyway with you. So therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam said like this. Even though there's no intrinsic value, they're not going to benefit anything by bringing these little babies to Hakel, I'm going to make it a mitzvah. I'm going to command you to do it. And if you do it to fulfill my command, I'll reward you. Retain sachar, in order to give reward to the people who bring them. The Rabbanu Shalom, as a king, commanded us something that there is really no intrinsic value to. But if you do it, and you obey, you'll get rewarded from the king. So here's a case where there's an exception to the rule. Most mitzvahs have an intrinsic value, and they're also the command of a king. You get rewarded by the intrinsic value of the mitzvah, and you get rewarded from the king. Here, there is no intrinsic value, but the king made it a mitzvah, so you'll get rewarded. You get rewarded from the king. So, a person who believes, realizes he did an aveira, and he blemished his neshama. He harmed himself. He made himself spiritually sick. So he regrets, right, making himself spiritually sick. But it's more than that. When a person does an aveira, he doesn't only affect himself. But Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh doesn't mean we're responsible for one the other, but it means that we are interlocked, interconnected one with the other. Therefore, we're responsible for each other. And therefore, what I do affects you. This concept of live and let live, you know, mind your own business, right? As long as you're doing it in the privacy of your own home, right, and not harming anybody else, so, you know, it's consenting adults, do what you want. That philosophy is not a Torah philosophy, to say the least. But it's definitely not a Torah philosophy. It is this concept that what a person does only can affect them, and therefore it's nobody else's business to get involved, is connected to the mitzvah of hocheach tochiach, the mitzvah of giving rebuke. There's a mitzvah of lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. There's many mitzvahs that are, you are responsible to get involved in other people's business. Their business, your business. And you can't just stand by idly and say, well, let everybody, you know, do their own thing, and as long as they're not stepping on anybody's toes, that's okay. First of all, I'm responsible for other people. Secondly, that concept that you're only harming yourself and therefore it's nobody else's business doesn't exist. There's nothing that a person does that doesn't affect other people, positively or negatively. Even if you do it in the privacy of your own home and nobody knows about it, it still affects other people. And the example I like to give, even though it's obviously an absurd example, but it does have some kind of basis in the physical world. Today, there are people that believe, whether it's true or not is irrelevant, that fluorocarbons can upset the ozone layer of the atmosphere and weaken it, and because of that, radiation comes through and causes diseases, whatever. So fluorocarbons were in deodorants. Okay. So let's make it the most absurd possibility that if you spritz your deodorant and release these fluorocarbons, you are going to create a opening in the ozone layer somewhere maybe thousands of miles away, and radiation is going to beat down on 10,000 Chinese people and give them immediate cancer. Okay? And that is a result directly of your spritzing your deodorant. Would anybody say, well, I'm doing this in the privacy of my own bedroom, it's my underarm, it's nobody else's business what I spritz or not, and not true? Because what you're doing is causing 10,000 Chinese people to get cancer. So you are a masik. You're doing it in the privacy of your own bedroom, so what? But you're polluting the world. And you're causing a terrible result to people all over the world. So, same thing with aveiras. Aveiras are spiritual pollution. And when you do an aveira, you release into the atmosphere this kind of pollution. That's what made the mabul. Why did the Rebbe Shem destroy the world by the mabul? Because people's deeds had such an effect. At that time, what they did was really intense, for the good and for the bad, and had a tremendous effect on the whole world. They polluted the world. And the entire creation became polluted. The animals weren't punished, that's what weren't they killed, they were polluted. So they had to be taken care of, they couldn't be around anymore. The earth became polluted. The only things that weren't polluted were the fish, because they were in a mikveh. And how do you take away spiritual pollution? Put it in a mikveh. So God immersed the entire world in a mikveh. That was called the mabul. And that mabul lasted 40 days and 40 nights, which is the Arboim saw the 40 measures that make up a mikveh. And that way he purified the world. And that's why the fish didn't have to be destroyed, because they weren't affected. They weren't polluted, because they were in the water to begin with. So every single thing in the world became polluted, and therefore it had to be destroyed. It had to be purified and start again. Only the things that weren't polluted. After the mabul, things are not that intense anymore, but they still are affected. And somebody does an aveira, he releases into the world pollution, spiritual pollution, that could cause tremendous negative results. And we don't know necessarily what the results are, but because of aveiras, bad results happen in the world all over, not only to that person, not only to his family, but to all those around him. And not only that, it could be worldwide. We don't know what the effects could be. So a person who really believes that aveiras are wrong and they have an intrinsic detrimental effect doesn't only regret hurting himself, but he regrets polluting the world, hurting other people, and people who are sensitive to that, right? Sensitive to not wanting to harm themselves, at least, and sensitive also not wanting to be mazikim of other people, that could be a reason to regret an aveira. So for a person sensitive to that idea, that's a reason to regret. Next reason to regret. There's a difference between animals and human beings. Right? There is no covet of being an animal. Right? If somebody calls you an animal, you get offended. Right? You get insulted, I hope. Even though in some strata of society, right, people pride themselves as being animals. He's a real animal. That's a praise. But we're not in that kind of strata of society. And being called an animal or function like an animal is a busha. So when a person realizes that the basic difference between an animal and a human being, and this is the same difference between an immature person and a mature person, and it's a busha to be immature. The difference between them, and this applies to children. Children, that's why children are not responsible for their actions. Because a child who is immature, is not mature yet, functions basically like an animal. What's the difference between an animal and a human being? Animals function on instinct. What they want, they do, without any cheshbon. An animal sees something, it doesn't make a cheshbon whether, you know, it's going to get a stomach ache if it eats this thing, right? If somebody's going to shoot it because it stole something or whatever, right? Or whether they're going to be fleishik and not be able to eat ice cream for the next 6 hours. The animal does not make that cheshbon before it eats. It eats because it wants to eat, it's hungry, it eats, finished. A human being also has instincts and drives. It also has appetites. But a human being has the power to control them and to say, you know what, I really want to eat this thing, but it's really not good for me. It's going to give me a stomach ache. It's going to give me this disease. It's going to make me break out in hives. And I really, seichel-wise, my seichel overpowers my drives and my desires. An animal doesn't have seichel. Its seichel can't overpower its drives and desires. It does whatever comes naturally to do. Human beings have a seichel. In fact, they say that is a b'derech tzachus, u'mosar ho'odem min ha'behema ayin. The difference, the benefit that people have over animals is ayin. They could say no. Animal doesn't say no, just does. A human being can say no, not going to do it. That's what makes a human being a human being. He can control his desires. He doesn't have to go according to his instincts. An animal will always follow his instincts. Once explained that that's what Reb Simcha Zissel meant when he said the following. He said that Darwin proposed the theory of evolution, that people evolved from apes and monkeys because he never saw a real human being. And therefore he assumed that the refined animals around him came from other animals. Had he ever seen a real human being like my Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he never could have made such a theory. Now, on the surface, it's a cute word, but it doesn't seem to be true. Because Darwin was not, you know, this guy in a loincloth that, you know, swung from the vines of trees with a turkey leg in one hand and a banana in the other hand, you know, beating on his chest. He was a very refined, intellectual person who had very refined intellectual friends. So how in the world could Simcha Zissel say he never saw a real human being? Or he thought he lived in the jungle and he only saw these, what's it called, Neanderthal people? So what he meant, I think, is the following. Like we said, an animal is a product of instinct. You can't change an animal's instincts. You can train an animal to act refined, but you can't change their instincts. They still remain an animal. Famous Maisa with the Rambam, that they trained the cats to be waiters, and the first mouse that went by, the cats remembered their cats. Right? You can train them to act, to behave in a certain way, but you can't change their nature. You can't educate them and refine them. You can train them to behave in a certain way, but their instinct will always get the best of them. The difference of a human being is that they can overpower those instincts, and they can act, and not just be trained to act in a refined way, but actually be refined. That's the difference. Therefore, what Reb Simcha Zissel meant is the following. Yeah, Darwin had very refined people, but nobody who ever worked on themselves and was in total control and could control and go against their basic drives and instincts. That they didn't have. And therefore, they basically were glorified animals. They had the same exact parameters as animals, except more refined. So it's possible that these animals came from other animals, because they have the same parameters. Have you ever seen my Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who was in total control, who in animal is impossible to be like that, would realize that human beings and animals are two different types? They're not just the same type, one is more or less. They're completely apples and oranges. Here, a human being is not the same sug as an animal. And therefore, it's impossible that this sug came from this sug. That's what he meant. So if that's the case, a person who does what he knows is wrong, because he wants to, because he has the drive, because it's exciting or tempting or pleasurable or whatever, and realizes that if he would be functioning according to his seichel, his intellect, he wouldn't do these things. Then, and he did anyway, that means that he basically acted like an animal. He functioned like an animal, not like a human being. And that is a bush. It's an embarrassment. It's an insult. And that should make a person have harata of regret doing a sin. It's another possible regret. Again, this doesn't apply to everybody. Some people are more sensitive to being ungrateful. Some people are more sensitive to the damage they cause themselves. Some people are more sensitive to the fact that they should act in an intellectual way, and they act in an animal way, like a behemoth. Some people don't care being behemoth, whatever. Another thing that a person can regret is the fact that by doing an aveira, you benefit temporarily. You get enjoyment, you get reward, what's it called, you make a profit, whatever the aveira is, you stole something, you ate something that tasted good. So you benefited in a very short-term benefit. But long-term, talking about eternity, you lost that, because you exchanged an olam that is very, very short and temporary with an olam that is eternal. And that should make a person regret what he did. Right? I exchanged something very, very valuable, my olam haba, with something that gave me pleasure, but there's no comparison. Right? I sold a very, very priceless painting which I could have made millions of dollars on for 10 cents. Because I needed the dime to, what's it called, to buy a piece of candy and enjoy for a few minutes. So if you realize that that's what you did, right? You gave up something that could have supported you for the rest of your life. and you needed that candy now and you didn't have a dime, so you sold it all for a dime, right? That should make a person regret. So if you sold away your olam haba for a few minutes' pleasure, that's another reason why a person would regret a sin. Okay.
Eternity is such a thing. Nobody can understand really what it is.
I know, but you don't have to understand what it is. All you have to understand is that it's longer than whatever you can understand. Right? It's 1 second longer than what you can understand. That's enough. Again, all of these things depend on how intensely you believe all of this. If you don't believe anything, right, really, then none of this is going to make you regret. And we all believe, the question is, how intensely do we believe and how real is it to us? You know, people say they believe, and they really do. But there's a difference, like we've said many times, between believing something intellectually where it's just theoretical and really, really feeling it. Right? The difference, like we always say, tells Zervort, between seeing a sign that says wet paint and feeling the paint and seeing it on your finger. This you experience, and this you know intellectually. So we all believe all of this. Question is, how real is it to us? The more real it is, the more you can have charata. So part of getting the charata is learning about the sin, is internalizing what these things really are, really feeling them. Not just believing them, but feeling them. So that's all of these things can be reasons to regret a sin. But if they remain just intellectual, you're not going to regret the sin. It has to be something that you actually experience and feel. Okay. So now, how about regretting a sin and not really stopping to do it? You regret it, but you don't stop. Does that benefit anything? So Chazal say, one way of understanding this Chazal, there's another way, we'll see from the Rambam. But one way of understanding the Chazal is exactly that scenario. That a person who does tshuva, meaning he regrets the sin, but he doesn't stop doing it, is ketovel v'sheretz biyado. He's like going into a mikveh, holding a sheretz, so when he goes into the mikveh, what's it called, and he comes out, he becomes tamei again. Because the sheretz is something that makes you tamei. So you go into the mikveh, and you're doing the tshuva, you have this regret, and as soon as you come out, you become tamei again. So you never really became tar. So it would seem like it's useless. If you regret doing a sin, but you don't stop doing it, so basically it's your regret is futile. Says the Mabit in Beis Elokim, that's not true. Because if that were the case, it would be you didn't go to the mikveh. If the regret is meaningless, then you weren't tovel. But they say it's tovel v'sheretz biyado. You did something, you went into that mikveh. It didn't have an effect to take away your tumah, because when you came up, you still had the aveir. But you did go into the mikveh. So he says there is a slight benefit. It doesn't take away the aveira, it's not tshuva that's going to square you away, but there is a benefit. What's a benefit? So I think the benefit is that at least you realize you're doing something wrong. People can be oblivious and think what they're doing is okay, and have no regret at all. But if you regret, that means that at least you believe that it's wrong. You believe that you've caused yourself harm. You believe that you're rebelling against the Rabbanu Shalom. You believe all of that. You just can't get the strength to stop. But all those things that you believe are positive things. So the regret, the way we explained what will make you regret, are very positive ideas. If they won't bring you to stop the Aveira, then they're not really tshuva. But in themselves, they're still positive things. So it's ketovel, you did go into the mikveh. You did something. It didn't have an effect, right, to change your status. But l'maisa, there is a benefit. There is something positive about having that regret itself, because it's based on these ideas. And just believing in these things is in itself a positive thing. It could be worse. It could be that since you believe all these and you still don't stop doing the Aveira, then you're really a Rasha, Lahachis. But that's usually not the case. You're not doing it because, even though, despite the fact that I believe all of this, to heck with it all. No, I believe all of this. I really would like to stop, but I can't. I just can't overpower my Yetzirah. That's still, regretting these things is better than ignoring them completely. So at least you accomplish something. Right? And that's what the Maharal says in the following Gemara. Gemara says that Achav lost his share in the world to come. He was an idol worshipper. So one of the Amoroyim, I don't remember who, maybe somebody remember the name, I don't remember what it was, said that tomorrow we will, he was giving a shiur about the kings that lost their share in the world to come. Achav was one of them. So he said, tomorrow we'll continue with our friends. You know, in a joking manner. That night, Achav came to him in a dream. And he said to him, who are you calling your friend? Right? He asked him some shilas and halacha, where you make the motzi on a piece of bread or whatever, on a loaf of bread. And he didn't know the answer. He said, you don't know these elementary halachas and you call me your friend? So I'm a much bigger Talmud Chacham than you. Don't call me your friend. Don't refer to me so flippantly. So this Amora said, if you're such a big Talmud Chacham, why were you an Ovid Avodah Zarah and lose your chelik in Olam Haba? Right? So he said, if you would have been there with us, you would have picked up your robe and run after the Avodah Zarah. You know what it's like. Because after in the beginning of the Bayis Sheni, when they first built the second Beis HaMikdash, the Chachamim were able to negate the Avodah Zarah, the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. We don't know what that Yetzer Hara is. The Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah was stronger than the Yetzer Hara for Arayis. We have an understanding what that Yetzer Hara is. They understood how the world works. They understood the power of all these spiritual powers in the world, and they had this tremendous drive and desire to serve Avodah Zarah. It was something that we can't relate to. To us it seems like childish things, bowing down to an idol or whatever. But they understood the inner workings of these things intellectually, and they had a tremendous Yetzer Hara that drove them to it. They needed tremendous strength to overpower it. He said, if you would have been there, you would have picked up your rope. Says the Maharal, what does that mean? He said, what Achav was saying is the following. We had this tremendous desire to serve Avodah Zarah, but we still knew that it was wrong, and we regretted it. We just couldn't control ourselves. And therefore, if something happened that prevented us from doing it, we felt relieved. We really know we shouldn't be doing it. We just can't control. We're just driven to it. So if something happened, the car didn't start and they couldn't get to the base of Avodah Zarah, they said, Baruch Hashem, Gamzu L'Tova. Right? But a person who doesn't regret it, right, he doesn't, and so he's happy if he's held back. And he doesn't try to do everything in his nature to not hold himself back. He's hoping that something will hold him back from doing it. But somebody who has no regret at all, so when he's running to the Avodah Zarah, he doesn't want to be held back by his robe getting cut on some thorns or whatever. So he picks up the robe to make sure that nothing holds him back. That's a person who has no regret. Because a person who has regret is looking that maybe something will stop me. Hopefully, I'll be stopped. So that is a mile at least of regretting. Even if you don't stop doing the Avodah, but you know that it's wrong. But somebody who doesn't know it's wrong, doesn't regret it at all, is really two strikes against them. So, even regretting and not stopping to do the Avera, which Chazal say is Ketovel v'sheretz b'yado, which seems to imply that you didn't accomplish anything, is still, you went to the mikveh. You still accomplished something. It didn't accomplish an effect. It didn't create a result. But the process itself had some positive thing to it. That's charata without stopping. Okay. The next thing is aziva sachet. Okay, now you regret doing the sin. Now you have to stop doing it. And we'll see next. Oh, now next week we have no shir. We'll be in the middle of Mariv of Rosh Hashanah or eating your meal, whichever you're doing at this time. And right, Wednesday night, right. So we will not have a shir on the Wednesday night between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. This is the last shir before Sukkot. But we will have a shir on Sunday night instead. Not here in this house, but for the whole Moshav, in place of this year, Sunday night of what's it called, of after Tzom Gedalia Sunday. Sunday night after Tzom Gedalia, after you had a chance to eat and rest a little bit, probably about, and the clocks changed then, or maybe they changed that. They changed the night before. What? Changed Motzei Shabbos. Right, so there'll be, the task will be over earlier. Probably about 8:30, 9 o'clock, we will have a Leil Hisorus, which will take the place of this year, and it will be Le'ilui Dishmas Rabbi Shapiro. So I don't remember if I told Carmi or not, but now you know. The
is it just for Moshe?
Huh?
Is it just for Moshe?
No, anybody can come to Leil Hisorus. If we have a banquet and we're giving out free food, it's only for the Moshe. If we're giving out free Torah and Musar, anybody can come. What?
Except for people from the
Moshe. Except for people from the Moshe. Right. Very well said. In any case, so that will, and I'm not sure, it could be at that time we'll finish some of these ideas. But let me give you something to think about till the next time we speak about this. I don't know when it's going to be, but maybe I think maybe we'll just finish the Inyan that night. Why not? It's a good thing to speak about before Yom Kippur, and I don't have to prepare a new shiur then. Yeah, it sounds great. In any case, so it says how you have to commit yourself not to do this sin again. A few things to think about. Why is that necessary? You regretted it, you did tshuva, so you don't have to get up every morning and say, I'm not going to eat ham sandwiches. So why, if you ate a ham sandwich and you did tshuva and you regret it, do you have to commit yourself not to do it again? You're anyway not allowed to do it again. So why the commitment? One thing. Secondly, it says the commitment has to be so strong that God will testify that you'll never do that sin again. And that seems to imply that if you ever do the sin again, you didn't do tshuva. Tshuva is only if God will testify that you won't do the sin again. If that's the case, then most of us haven't done tshuva for anything. Because we usually end up doing, especially on Yom Kippur, we usually end up doing the sins again during the next year. Right? Unless you did something really, really terrible that year, like you murdered somebody, maybe you won't murder anybody the next year. But if it's the regular sins that we all say, you know, we didn't make brachas with kavana, and maybe ate things without a good heksher, and we spoke lashon hara, then from what I can see, the machzor doesn't change, and all those lists they give out say the same averas every year, and we all say the same thing, so it must be that we've done them again. So if the tshuva is only if you commit yourself not to do it again so strongly that God can testify that you won't do it again, that seems to imply that if you ever do it again, then you didn't do tshuva. That's pretty depressing. So what does it mean? And the truth is, why does God have to testify anyway? Because if you can know if you did it again or not. See, by the time you die, if you did it again or not, then you'll know. And if you want to know on the spot, God doesn't tell you. So what does it help that God testifies? So God got to get involved over here. If you never do it again, you know that you didn't do tshuva. And you won't know about it until you finish your life. So, and unless God tells you, and he doesn't usually tell you. So what is there significant about the Rabbanu Shel Olam testifying? To who is he testifying? That you won't do it again. So that's what we in Yemei Tzachon will speak. What is this commitment? What's the purpose of it? How do you fulfill it? And how strong does it have to be? That, and I think that's what we're going to speak about that Sunday night. I don't know if we're going to invite other people to speak or not. Probably yes. We'll probably ask the family to have somebody speak about Rabbi Shapiro also. Not going to be just a shiur. It's going to be Le'ilui Nishmas Rabbi Shapiro. So we'll have a hesped for something similar to a hesped, since it's within 30 days of Sukkot. You can't really have a night of hespedim, but it'll be something. The Shevach, he was a very important person in this Kehillah, and for sure deserves a night for people to reflect on what's lost. So that's the coming attractions, coming events. I wish you all a Ksiva v'chasima tova. Finish another year of these shiurim, and Amir Hashem, we should be able to start a new year and many, many years to come.